No black box data was ever recovered from the Kestrel. Nothing of the Kestrel was ever recovered. Lieutenant Cloud looked up from his lair in the pilot's lounge, a table laid out with enticements to trap the unwary, namely a deck of cards, and saw Jared in front of him.
"Well, if it isn't the jokester himself," Cloud said, smiling.
"Hello, Lieutenant," Jared said.
"Long time no see."
"Not my fault," Cloud said. "I've been here this whole time. Where have you been?"
"Out saving humanity," Jared said.
"You know, the usual."
"That's a dirty job, but someone has to do it," Cloud said.
"And I'm glad it's you instead of me."
Cloud kicked his leg to push out a chair and picked up the cards.
"Have a seat, why don't you? I'm due to the pre-launch formalities of my supply run in about 15 minutes. That's just enough time to teach you how to lose at Texas Hold'em."
"I already know how to do that," Jared said.
"See? There's one of your jokes again," Cloud said.
"I actually came to see you about your supply run," Jared said. "I was hoping you'd let me deadhead down with you."
"I'll be happy to have you,"
Cloud said, and began shuffling the cards.
"Ping me your leave clearance and we'll be able to continue this game on board. The supply transport's on autopilot most of the way down anyway. I'm just on board so that if it crashes, they can say someone died."
"I don't have leave clearance," Jared said, "but I need to get down to Phoenix."
"What for?" Cloud asked.
"I need to visit a dead relative," Jared said, "and I'm going to be shipping out soon."
Cloud chuckled and cut the deck of cards.
"I'm guessing the dead relative will be there when you get back," he said.
"It's not the dead relative I'm worried about," Jared said.
He reached his hand out and pointed to the deck.
May I?"
Cloud handed over the deck. Jared sat and began shuffling it.
"I can see you're a gambling man, Lieutenant," he said.
He finished shuffling and put the deck in front of Cloud.
"Cut it," Jared said.
Cloud cut the deck a third of the way down. Jared took the smaller portion and placed it in front of himself.
"We'll pick a card from our decks at the same time. I get the high card, you take me to Phoenix, I go see who I need to see. I'm back before you lift."
"And if I get the high card, we try for 2 out of 3,
Cloud said. Jared smiled.
"That wouldn't be very sporting now, would it? Are you ready?"
Cloud nodded.
"Draw,"
Jared said. Cloud drew an 8 of diamonds. Jared drew a 6 of clubs.
"Damn,"
Jared said. He pushed his cards over to Cloud.
"Who's the dead relative?"
Cloud asked, taking the cards.
"It's complicated," Jared said.
"Try me,"
Cloud said.
"It's the clone of the man whose consciousness I was created to house," Jared said.
"Okay, so you're absolutely correct about this being complicated," Cloud said. "I haven't the slightest idea what you just said."
"Someone who is like my brother," Jared said. "Someone I didn't know."
"For someone who is just a year old, you lead an interesting life," Cloud said.
"I know," Jared said. "It's not my fault, though."
He stood up.
"I'll catch you later, Lieutenant."
"Oh, stop it," Cloud said. "Give me a minute to take a leak and we'll go. Just keep quiet when we get to the transport and let me do all the talking. And remember, if we get in trouble, I'm going to blame it all on you."
"I wouldn't have it any other way," Jared said.
Getting past the transport bay crew was almost ridiculously simple. Jared stuck close to Cloud, who ran through his pre-flight check and consulted his crew with businesslike efficiency. They ignored Jared, or assumed that since he was with Cloud, he had every right to be there. 30 minutes later, the transport was easing its way down to Phoenix Station, and Jared was showing Cloud that he wasn't actually very good at losing at Texas Hold'em. This annoyed Cloud greatly. At the Phoenix Station ground port, Cloud consulted with the ground crew and then came back to Jared.
"It's going to take them about 3 hours to load her up," he said. "Can you get to where you're going and be back before then?"
"The cemetery is just outside Phoenix City," Jared said.
"Well, you should be fine then," Cloud said. "How are you going to get there?"
"I haven't the slightest idea," Jared said.
"What?"
Cloud said.
Jared shrugged.
"I didn't actually think you'd take me," he confessed. "I didn't plan this far ahead."
Cloud laughed.
"God loves a fool," he said.
and then motioned to Jared.
Come on, then. Let's go meet your brother.
Metairie Catholic Cemetery lay in the heart of Metairie, one of the oldest neighborhoods in Phoenix City. It was around when Phoenix was still called New Virginia, and Phoenix City was still Clinton, before the attacks that leveled the early colony and forced humans to regroup and reconquer the planet. The earliest graves in the cemetery dated back to the early days, when Metairie was a line of plastic and mud buildings, and proud Louisianans had settled there with the pretensions of its being Clinton's first suburb. The graves Jared visited were on the other side of the cemetery from the first line of the dead. The graves were marked by a single headstone upon which three names were engraved, each with their separate dates: Charles, Cheryl, and Zoe Boutin.
Jesus, Cloud said. An entire family.
No, Jared said, kneeling down at the headstone.
Not really. Cheryl is here. Zoe died far away, and her body was lost with many others. And Charles isn't dead. This is someone else, a clone he created so it would look like he had killed himself.
Jared reached out and touched the headstone.
There's no family here.
Cloud looked at Jared kneeling by the headstone.
I think I'll take a look around, he said,
trying to give Jared some time.
No,
Jared said, and looked over.
Please, I'll be done in just a minute, and then we can go.
Cloud nodded in assent, but looked toward the close-by trees.
Jared returned his attention to the headstone.
He lied to Cloud about who he had come to see, because who he wanted to see wasn't here. Outside of a bit of pity, Jared found himself at an emotional loss regarding the poor, nameless clone Boutin killed to fake his own death. Nothing in the still-emerging bank of memories Jared shared with Boutin featured the clone in anything but the most clinical of settings, emotional or otherwise. The clone wasn't a person to Boutin, but a means to an end that Jared, naturally enough, had no memory of, since the recording of his consciousness was done before Boutin pulled the trigger. Jared tried to feel some sympathy for the clone, but there were others here he had come for. Jared hoped the clone indeed had never woken up, and left it at that. Jared focused on the name Cheryl Boutin, and felt muted, conflicted emotions echo back from his memory. Jared realized that while Boutin had affection for his wife, labeling that affection as love would have been overstating the case. The two married because they both wanted children, and they both understood and liked being around the other well enough, although Jared sensed that even that emotional attachment had been tamped down by the end. Their mutual joy of their daughter kept them from separation. Even their cooled relationship was tolerable and preferable to the mess of a divorce and the trouble it would cause their child. From some crevasse in Jared's mind came an unexpected memory about Cheryl's death, that on her fatal trip she had not been hiking alone. She had been with a friend who Boutin suspected was her lover. There was no jealousy that Jared could detect. Boutin didn't begrudge her a lover. He had one of his own. But Jared felt the anger Boutin felt at the funeral, when the suspected lover had lingered over the grave too long at the end of the funeral ceremony. It took time away from Boutin's final farewell to his wife, and Zoe's to her mother.
Zoe.
Jared traced her name on the gravestone and said the name in the place she should have rested, but did not, and felt again the grief that spilled from Boutin's memories into his own heart. Jared touched the gravestone once more, felt the name engraved into stone, and wept. A hand rested on Jared's shoulder. He looked up to see Cloud there.
It's all right, Cloud said. We all lose the people we love.
Jared nodded.
I know, he said. I lost someone I loved. Sarah. I felt her die, and then I felt the hole she left inside me. But this is different.
It's different because it's a child,
Cloud said.
It's a child I never knew,
Jared said, and looked up at Cloud again.
She died before I was born. I didn't know her. I couldn't know her. But I do.
He gestured to his temples.
Everything about her is in here. I remember her being born. I remember her first steps and her first words. I remember holding her here at her mother's funeral. I remember the last time I saw her. I remember hearing that she was dead. It's all here.
No one has anyone else's memories, Cloud said. He said it in a way to soothe Jared.
It just doesn't work that way.
Jared laughed bitterly.
But it does, he said. It does with me. I told you, I was born to hold someone else's mind. They didn't think that it worked, but it did. And now his memories are my memories. His life is my life. His daughter.
Jared stopped talking, unable to go on. Cloud kneeled down next to Jared and put an arm around his shoulder and let him mourn.
It's not fair, Cloud said eventually. It's not fair you have to mourn this child.
Jared gave a small laugh.
We're in the wrong universe for fair, he said simply.
That we are, Cloud agreed.
I want to mourn her, Jared said. I feel her. I can feel the love I had for her, that he had for her. I want to remember her, even if that means I have to mourn her. That's not too much to bear for her memory. It's not, is it?
No,
Cloud said.
I guess it's not.
Thank you,
Jared said.
Thank you for coming with me here. Thank you for helping me.
Hey, that's what friends are for, Cloud said.
Dirac, Jane Sagan said. She was standing behind them. You've been reactivated. Jared felt the sudden snap of reintegration, and felt Jane Sagan's awareness wash over him, and felt mildly revolted by it, even as other parts of him rejoiced at coming back into a larger sense of being. Some part of Jared's brain noted that being integrated wasn't just about sharing information and becoming part of a higher consciousness. It was also about control, a way to keep individuals tied to the group. There was a reason why Special Forces soldiers hardly ever retired. Being retired means losing integration. Losing integration means being alone. Special Forces soldiers were almost never alone, even when they were by themselves. Dirac, Sagan said again.
Speak normally, Jared said, and stood up, still looking away from Sagan. You're being rude.
There was an infinitesimal pause before Sagan responded.
Very well, she said.
Private Dirac, it's time to go. We're needed back on Phoenix Station.
Why?
Jared said. I'm not going to talk about it in front of him, Sagan said, indicating Cloud.
No offense, Lieutenant.
And none taken, Cloud said.
Tell me out loud, Jared said, or I'm not going.
I'm giving you an order, Sagan said.
And I'm telling you to take your orders and shove them up your ass, Jared said.
Unless you tell me where I'm going and why, I think I'm just staying right here.
Sagan audibly sighed. She turned to Cloud.
Believe me when I tell you that if any of this passes your lips, I will shoot you myself, at very close range.
Lady, Cloud said,
I believe every word you say.
3 hours ago, the Red Hawk was destroyed by the Oban, Sagan said. It managed to launch a skip drone before it was totally destroyed. We've lost 2 other ships in the last 2 days. They've entirely disappeared. We think the Oban tried to do the same with the Red Hawk, but weren't able to do it for whatever reason. We got lucky, if you want to call this lucky. Between these 3 ships and 4 other Special Forces ships that have disappeared in the last month, it's clear the Oban are targeting Special Forces.
Why? Jared said.
We don't know,
Sagan said. But General Szilard has decided we're not going to wait until more of our ships get attacked. We're going in to get Bhutan, Dirac. We move in 12 hours.
That's crazy, Jared said. All we know is that he's on a wrist. That's an entire moon to look at. And no matter how many ships we use, we'll be attacking the Oban home system.
We know where he is on a wrist, Sagan said. And we have a plan to get past the Oban to get him.
How?
That I'm not saying out loud, Sagan said. It's the end of discussion, Dirac. Come with me or don't. We've got 12 hours until the attack begins. You've already caused me to waste time coming down here to get you. Don't let's waste any more time getting back.